The following is Lynn Polishchuk and Julie Strothman's talk, Numbers Are Our Friends, Information Architects Make the Best Web Analysts, from the 2011 Information Architecture Summit. The 2011 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by UIE's User Experience Training Library, with scores of online seminars your team can access on demand. Hear the field's top experts on timely topics and the current design challenges you're facing. Get a free UIE virtual seminar at uie.com/IAS11.
All right, everybody, we're going to get started, so please take your seats. There'll be a NASCAR checker flag wagged a little bit later. So I'm just going to introduce real quickly the session here. And we have Lynn, who's a certified web analyst from Omniture. Omniture. Did I get it wrong?
In Google, no, yeah, I'm a web analyst. That's mine.
Web analyst. Right. And we also have Julie here, who's a web strategist. And they are going to give their little talk here, and it's going to be... Well, I'll let you describe the talk, and they're going to also get a little bit of their own bio, so I'm going to cut this short. We'll do Q&A at the end. Do you guys want questions during, or?
At the end would be cool, yeah.
Questions at the end, please, and we'll run mics out and everything to everybody.
Welcome. Our talk today is called Numbers Are Our Friends, and a little bit meta before we start here. When we started talking about doing a presentation on web analytics, it's complex, and our goal was to not do a talk that would make your eyes roll back in your head or fall asleep or do any of that stuff. So that's typically what tends to happen in a web analytics presentations that I've seen. So we wanted to try and stay away from the idea of jargon and sort of big scary terms. So if we do that, if we slip into jargon, flag us and we will buy you a drink afterwards. But that's the plan.
Was bad
plan. Let me qualify that. If we don't define the jargon term, drinks, but self-funded, so I'll do my best. So, to get started.
So, as user experience designers and information architects, why are we here talking about analytics? We are pattern seekers. We are information interpreters. We educate our clients and our stakeholders daily, and we have an obligation to teach them how to use the data that they have at hand. So, I have a story about why I love analytics. I direct web strategy at a small college in Vermont, and we were running into trouble both with content strategy and with findability because of industry use of a particular term. So because of our dear president, we have marching orders to only use the term AD/HD when we talk about attention disorders. All of our students have learning disabilities. And I started talking to students about whether or not they identify with the term ADHD. And they said they really didn't, that a lot of them, in any case, attention disorders, yes. Hyperactive, no. And so we had this tone problem. But I also knew that we had a findability problem, because when I look at Google Analytics, I can see that 80% of the people coming from search to our site are coming through branded search, meaning that they're searching by the name Landmark College. They already know us. And branded search is good, but not when you have that much branded search. You're not bringing a lot of new people to your site. So I thought about going to the president and saying to her, we have a problem. We have 80% branded search. And really didn't think that that would have the impact that I needed. So I took a look at Google Insights. And I should tell you that we have links to all the tools that we talk about in the slide or in the last slide, so you'll have access to those. Links. So Google Insights, you can add terms to the search, and it'll show you the popularity of those terms over time, right? So I looked at ADD college, ADHD college, and AD/HD college. You already saw the preview of this, but here's what I found. 3 times as many people search for ADD college as ADHD college, and absolutely nobody searches for AD/HD college. And the impact of this data was immediate. The president said she just let go of the need to use AD/HD and told me to go ahead. So my advice is let the data talk for you and egos will just step aside. I am a generalist. I work in-house as a team of one, and I rely on data to be persuasive for me in an environment that's rife with silos and competition.
So why do I care about analytics? So I've been in the web space for about 10 years, which makes me feel really old to say that. So I started in marketing. That was where I first was thrown off the deep end. I did marketing, and then I got into web analytics because marketing, you need to know your numbers. And then eventually kind of got pushed over into UX, which is where I've been for the last few years. My sort of good example of like really simple things that web analytics can do for you is I had a client, a project where I was brought in, and I was made to do like a troubleshooting. They had this, you know, total fire drill over a really expensive redesign of a site. They had spent a ton of money, and they had ended up with this really intense website. Lots of graphics. We had flash banners going all over the place. You can imagine it was really fantastic. But they'd also had like a 40%+ drop in their overall sales. And so there was just this panic, like, we need to know what's going on. So I started to look at the site, and the UX person in me is going, okay, well, this company sells home satellite equipment. And their number one product is satellite broadband connections. So they have people coming to the site to buy faster internet. And here you have this site that's got like 30 miles of scrolling below the fold. It's this huge, intense page. And it was just clear, like, I don't even think this would load for someone on dial-up. And I started to kind of, you know, look at Google Analytics, popped it open. One simple report, because I had actually gone to the CEO and I'd said this. I think that probably people are having trouble loading the page. That's why they're going. He was like, no, these guys are really smart. Look at this fabulous site they built. They would have thought of that. Right. So, so we jumped into the reports, and what it showed us really clearly was this. So we had a 43% drop in overall sales. 41% of the people coming to the site were on dial-up. So that gave me some backup. Immediately, he was like, okay, so let's try something else. So we did a reoptimization of the site and didn't just salvage the original conversion rate, but like way surpassed it. You know, the sales went way up. So it was a win, but web analytics helped me get that win. And as a consultant, as an independent consultant, web analytics gives me a way to speak to my stakeholders and my clients in a way they understand. They get numbers. I have to talk to them in numbers. So that's why I love it. So through putting together this talk, we decided to talk to a number of practitioners in the UX space and just understand why we find it really helpful, why so many designers seem unconvinced about web analytics. I heard things like, it's not my thing, it's not a priority for me. And you know, we kind of dug in a bit, like, why? There's a couple of sort of reasons that come up again and again. You know, this idea that numbers are scary. They are. I did really poorly in calculus in high school. It was like my kryptonite, right? So I get that this is scary and intimidating. There was a lot of talk about, we're told we need to measure stuff. What do we measure? We don't know, like measure things, but no real specifics about what that meant. This idea that we get these reports, these sexy reports, and they don't really mean anything to us. They're sexy, they're poorly designed. They mean something if you're a marketing person, they're loaded with jargon. But as me, the designer, I get this stuff, I just don't know what to make of it. So I leave it. There's no context here. So we wanted to talk about why, given these problems and these sort of hang-ups, why you should care about analytics. The biggest reason that I can kind of give you is this: credibility. Accountability equals credibility. Being well-versed in data gives us credibility. We work with counterparts in marketing. We work with counterparts in development. We really struggle, though, as practitioners for recognition of our work and the importance of what we're doing. One of the reasons that happens, I found over and over again, is that without understanding numbers, we're not as accountable as our counterparts are. If you don't have any kind of numbers to back you up, you're not accountable, you're not a priority, you're not going to get the resources you need, you're not going to get that voice. So understanding numbers and having that in a concrete sort of grasp, it gives our design decisions way more credibility. It gives us a seat at the table with our teams. Because you can tie numbers and revenue to the work that you do, you become a more integral part of that development process. You're no longer competing for resources and attention based on your like designerly intuition. I like blue. You know, no. You're actually coming in there and you're showing the actual value that you can drive as a practitioner, as a UX person. And they become more of a priority when you can kind of demonstrate the strategic sort of business case behind what you're talking about and the revenue implications there. In Nate Silver's talk yesterday, someone asked a really great question about how can we fit qualitative and quantitative data together? How do you kind of reconcile those two? And one way that I found again and again that's really useful to me is I will use quantitative data to kind of back up my qualitative data. So you have this idea of the $12 million form field. I don't know if anybody heard about this lately. So this was Expedia.com. They had published this lately that their web analytics and their optimization team had noticed that there was this really odd discrepancy between the number of people who clicked buy now and who actually completed and checked out and finished the process. And it seemed kind of weird, like buy now, that's a pretty concrete action. I'm going to buy something. Why would you not finish that? So it got handed over to their usability team. They did some usability testing. And what they came back with was there was one field, a company name field, that was causing users to error out on entering their address over and over and over again. And so they basically fixed it, and that was great. But because they have a real handle on their numbers and what the UX team is doing from a revenue standpoint, they were able to say, yeah, you know, this change that we made, it resulted in an additional $12 million in 1 year of revenue. Now, not all dealing with projects of this size, clearly, but if you even could go to a client or your boss and say, we're doing $20,000 extra, or you know, $5,000 extra a month, that's something. It gives you credibility. You now have juice to kind of get your stuff done. It's not selling out to kind of go with numbers. It actually helps to sort of move forward and to get things finished. Joe Megabo, who is their VP of Global Analytics and Optimization, he said, you know, what are we contributing to the business? And are we seeing things through, making sure that what we're doing is actually worth something? This is the right attitude. When you actually have that credibility with the executive suite and you have people listening to you, you can actually advocate for your users. What you're going to recommend is going to get done. So again, not selling out. The user definitely wins because more gets accomplished. You can show your value in a concrete way. So that's sort of why you should care about web analytics, is that it can actually help you move things forward. The next question that we sort of get when I get talking to people about web analytics who aren't really well versed in this space is, how do we get started? So it hasn't been on my radar. It wasn't a priority. So now I'm thinking maybe it might be. Where do I go? What's next? And you know, what can I do? So there's sort of three things that you can focus on to start this process and start thinking about it. Define your goals and your metrics. Educate yourself about the web analytics space and concepts and tools, and make some allies. And we'll talk about all three of those things. So define your goals and metrics. It's really funny when people come to me and they say, okay, I've been told or I need to learn, you know, my boss doesn't need to know about web analytics. So how can I learn about Omniture Site Catalyst today? And you sort of say, like, hang on a second. So, you know, we tend to jump way far ahead and overcomplicate things. It's not where you should be starting in this process if you've never approached it before. What you want to be thinking about is what you need to measure. What are the things that matter to you that are going to help you in your day-to-day that will make your experience better for your users? Josh Porter, who wrote the great book Designing for the Social Web, you know, he says, and he's right, metrics are simply numbers that measure the effectiveness of your business. Every business, every product, every project, every section or progress part through a project, that's going to have a different set of metrics. Your metrics are going to be dependent on whatever you're working on. Sometimes there are like a set of metrics that are kind of accepted. E-commerce is an example. How many people add to a cart? How many people check out? But we don't all work on e-commerce. Some people might be building a photo sharing app. Where do your metrics start to come into play there? You built a photo uploader, how many photos are being uploaded per person in a specific period of time? That's a metric. Maybe you're doing a redesign of a customer service portal. Are call center volumes dropping? Are fewer people having to call in after you've launched this? That's a metric. That's going to show you success.
Okay, so here's a very business-specific metric. A la Nate Silver, you know, small idea kind of data. I was waiting for a meeting with our admissions department to start. I heard them talking about the intense scrutiny they were under budget-wise. And they have this initiative where they bring in school counselors from across the country, all expenses paid. They get a weekend of presentations from our faculty and administrators and do a bunch of Vermont touristy activities. and you know, all expenses are paid. It's very, very costly for us. And the only metric that they were using to look at success was sort of the big metric of when those counselors sent us students and they enrolled. You know, so I'm waiting for this meeting, and we have our meeting, and I'm like dying to get back to my office because I'm pretty sure I have some data that can support their budget. And I did. So I looked at Google Analytics, which has a report on service providers, like your ISP, and I know from sitting at endless basketball games waiting for my children, that most schools name their network after their school. So I filtered the service provider data, this is this report, I filtered the service provider data for ISPs that include the word school, and I got this report. And I could see lots of school districts that send visits to our site, and I compared it to the people who came to visit during these weekends. And two of them, Seattle School District and Cobb County School District, these are people who sent visits to us, in 1 month sent over 40 visits each to our school, to our site, and spent over an average of 17 minutes per visit on our site. That's like kind of insane for our site. That never happens. So this was great for them. They were able, from a marketing perspective, to be able to justify the budget of sending people, but also the frontline staff and admissions followed up, looked at all of those schools as hot leads, even the ones who hadn't come, and could follow up on building that relationship. And then beyond that, I took this report and showed it to the faculty and administrators who were giving up their time for, frankly, what they thought was a ridiculous marketing initiative, and showed them that these people are staying engaged with us after visiting, and they were a lot less reluctant to give up their weekend time to do those presentations. So I think it also may have improved the experience for the visitors physically coming to campus. Also, these people were converting at like a rate of 4% compared to the general conversion rate on our site, which is like 0.5%. And so if you can ever offer data proving somebody's success, especially unasked for, it's always a win.
So this is a conversion, right? Any Canadians here? Come on. We had Jesus, right? Yeah. We get to be happy about this for a little while. It's only been a year. Come on. Give us something. But no, this is a conversion, and I was really surprised, again, when we were doing research and talking to practitioners. I actually had this question a number of times. What is a conversion? I keep hearing that. And I was kind of surprised. And so, but all a conversion is, it's a fancy word for goal. It is, what's the goal? You know, is somebody submitting a form? Is somebody signing up for your promotion? Is somebody checking out of your cart? That's all it is. A conversion is a silly, fancy word for a goal. And yay, Sydney.
Okay, so when you're looking at the mass amount of data that you have to segment the data. So by segment, I mean break it into smaller chunks of data. For the same reasons that we identify audiences, that we create personas to represent different audiences, we need to break up the data to be able to get actionable information about it. It's in that disaggregation that we get that actionable information. So for instance, if your business goal is brand awareness, and so you want to look at how many people are mentioning you in various social sites, you might create a segment of URL shorteners. So what I mean by that is people who came to your site from links like Bitly and other link shortening sites. And so in an analytics tool, you can very easily look at a report of how many of those people came. But the valuable information is when you take that group of people and not look just at how many came, but what did they do on your site when they were there? So when we talk about segmenting, we're talking about creating a subset of data that you can then pursue and ask questions of. So how about mobile? If you're looking for mobile, you know, if you're in the mobile space, there's a canned report that can tell you how many people came from different devices. And that can be useful. You know, maybe somebody's pushing for a BlackBerry app and you can look and say, well, you know, there's 7% of your visitors are coming from BlackBerry. So they can make that decision if that's where they want to put those resources. But that's, again, just that looking at how many. So if we created a segment around people who came from mobile and then could look at what they did, we could look at what are the top pages they're visiting, is it the typical mobile content that we'd expect, like maps and contact us, or are they trying to use our tools on mobile, and really know more about it that way. So this shows you some possible business goals you might have, metrics you might use to assess those goals, and the segments that would be related. So if you're looking at customer loyalty, maybe the metric you're using is repeat visits, And the segment would be people who came more than once, the number of visits that they came. Okay, so pop quiz. There are two columns that are missing from this table that you might want to look at if you were looking at the segments that you're looking at, the metrics, and the business goal. Anyone have any idea what one of those might be? And I can give you a hint. They would be things that you would need to ask your client or your stakeholder for.
What is your goal?
The target number. What is your goal?
Baseline's
a good one.
Yeah.
And also the dollar value that they would place on those conversions, on those metrics. And that's a tough one. Recently, I sent an email to like four VPs asking for, you know, hey, what value do you place on requests for information to the college? What dollar value do you place on these kinds of things? And two of the people were like, yeah, she's asking for dollar value. And the two people responsible for those requests for information were like, we need a meeting. And, you know, they were really threatened that we were trying to look at metrics to assess their performance. And so we talked about it and we looked at how that could be valuable to look at value over time. So I offered to them, how about if we look at a scale of 1 to 10 instead of saying dollar value, because that was too threatening. And that would give us a way to compare different kinds of metrics. So we could say, this is really valuable for putting resources and time into maintaining and developing.
Right. As a consultant, when I'm dealing with a client, I have a rule that I never accept the answer more. We want more repeat visits, or we want more sales. It never works out. You always have to assign a value to that. We want 10% more visits in 3 months. We want 20% more visits in 6 months, repeat visits. We want to add an extra $5 to the overall average of each order that is placed, average value. If you actually tie hard numbers to your metrics when you're discussing them with your business, you know, your clients, your stakeholders, it gives you something tangible to measure against and to work towards, as opposed to just more. And this goes back to the idea of we want to prove our value, improve the value of our work, and drive budget and that kind of thing. So saying more doesn't usually fit very well. Julie talked a lot about segmenting your data and using that to drive creation of metrics. Another thing to keep in mind is that metrics aren't going to be static throughout a project or on a product. You're going to have different sets of metrics as you move through that process of being a customer. So again, this is Josh Porter's stages of user engagement. He talks about acquisition of customers. He talks about conversions of customers, you know, having them actually become a customer. Retention and satisfaction. Do they really like your product? Do they become an evangelist? Each of these different stages of engagement, you may set up metrics for acquisition that don't apply throughout the rest of this process. So don't get hung up when you're trying to define metrics that we have to come up with one set of metrics. That's going to be it. It never is. And in terms of actually building your metrics, I've had a lot of people ask me about frameworks and kind of, you know, big scary sounding things like that. I never get that far because when I'm actually trying to have this discussion with clients, I need it to be really, really simple. So what is a metric? It's a unit of measure. It's a form submission. It's a sale. How do we determine what that is, you know, if we're actually succeeding? I look at things like intent, task, and goal. So intent being, what is the intent of the person coming to your site? So maybe it's newsletter sign up. We want people to sign up for a newsletter that sends out promotions. The intent, they want to sign up for this newsletter. The task is signing up for the newsletter. So what in your design enables them to do that? And goal, do they sign up? Are they able to? Is that something that happens? It's a really simple way to think about building your actual metrics that you're going to track. Just think about the intent, what part of your design enables that, and what constitutes success. So lastly, in terms of determining your metrics, Livia Labatt did a great presentation at Interaction 10 in Savannah, and she said, numbers are an abstraction, but when we give them context, they have strength, significance, and nuance of language. This is really important. Context is really important. I've had a lot of people, again, when we were doing research for this talk, say, okay, well, what are the engagement metrics? You know, what are the UX metrics? And again, it all comes down to context. There's no silver bullet metric, ever. And I think we get really hung up on this idea of we need to define UX before we can measure it. Again, it's more about measuring your success and what you're doing at that moment in time. So every metric has to be taken in context. And that said, I mean, there are some engagement metrics. Time spent on a site is a good engagement metric. Julie mentioned it. People were coming from the school district and spending way more time than other people. That's great. I had a project where we were trying to redesign the UI for a call center. And in that case, having people have to sit on a search and filter page for a long period of time meant customers are waiting on hold. They're getting angry. That's a bad thing. So in that case, we really wanted to reduce the amount of time that people spent on that page. So again, that's an engagement metric, but you need to spin it in the way that makes sense for what you're trying to measure. So once you've kind of defined your metrics, and you have an idea of what it is you want to track and what you need to be paying attention to, it's important to start educating yourself. So I know what I want to track. How can I do it? We spend a lot of time in this community talking about mastery of tools and output tools like Graphel and Axer. This is really important. We need to be able to visually communicate our designs to our clients, our stakeholders. But we also need to sort of pay more attention to research tools and tools that will allow us to measure our effectiveness. This is really key. And again, it goes back to the idea of getting a seat at the table. I'm not going to get into a lot about Google Analytics, Omniture, all this stuff. It, again, is a context issue. Not all these tools will apply. In some cases, you're not working on a web app. They may not apply at all. But just getting out there and sort of educating yourself on what's available in the same way that you would want in all the options if you had to create a wireframe, you maybe want to know the options that will help you when you're trying to measure your success. Learn to love Avinash Kaushik and get involved in understanding the web analytics space and who the players are there. Avinash is the evangelist for analytics at Google. He's perhaps the nicest man I've ever met. If you send him an email, he will respond, usually like within a ridiculously short amount of time. And he's going to get mad that I told you that. But he's insanely passionate about voice of customer. He always talks about voice of customer, which is one of the reasons I really like him. He has a great blog called Occam's Razor, which we'll give you the link to. And he just wrote a book called Web Analytics 2.0 that is a really good overview of web analytics in its current form. So understanding and kind of looking for stuff like that will help you. Another good way to find information and kind of get your feet wet in this space is through Twitter. You might have heard of it. So Twitter is really useful. It's interesting. You know, UX, this community has a really active community on Twitter. So does the web analytics community, and I think we're both starting to become more aware of each other. So measure is the hashtag that is kind of universally used for web analytics on Twitter. If you go out, start looking through this hashtag, you will find great links to blog posts and to practitioners and to a lot of the vendors and tool providers. It's a really, really useful way to start getting a feel for what's out there. And I have so many times just thrown questions out with this hashtag and had really helpful responses. So that is a good way to get started in educating yourself. The next sort of important point in getting your feet wet in web analytics is to find some allies, make some allies within your company, within your organization. It's really important to work cross-channel, to kind of reach out, talk to your web analytics, your marketing departments, your dev, IT, whoever holds the keys to the data that you would need. Reaching out to help others, reaching out to get others to help you access this data, it's kind of a two-way street. They're helping you, but you can also help them, passing along insights to marketing, helping them kind of figure out in your web analytics team. A lot of the web analytics teams I've dealt with are really awesome at making like Excel reports. They're fancy and they're awesome, but they don't really have that context. And I've always found it great to work with them to kind of start building some insights based on what we know as UX practitioners. It helps them justify, you know, we're spending all this money on this tool. What are we getting out of it besides these fancy Excel reports? And they'll be more inclined to help you.
When we do user research, we are often limited by time and budget, and sometimes we leave on the table really valuable insights into what is happening with our users, especially if we don't access things like call center logs and open text form field submissions. Those are times where users are contacting us in the moment that they need assistance. And so these can be really useful in your communication brief when you're describing what the problems people are facing might be. But it's also an opportunity to become an expert in your organization's data. And when you do that, then you become a valuable resource across the organization.
Absolutely. So Christy Olson is someone who's working in this space, and she actually refers to herself as a UX analyst. She's kind of like crossover. What she says is, you know, getting into all this information is a way to build your tacit knowledge of your customers' needs and experiences. You do. And again, this is the whole idea of establishing yourself as a real, you know, benefit and a good person in your company that becomes a resource and the person people turn to when they want to understand user behavior and customer needs. You really need a holistic view of the data and of what's available to you. So you can't sort of do this on your own. You do need call center logs. In some cases, you may have to reach out to your dev team and say, what are we tracking? Like, can you tell me how many people logged in last month? Can you tell me how many people are coming in on IE6? You want to hope it's this, but good luck. But it really helps you to actually, you have to have their cooperation in order to get things done.
I showed you some examples of proving value, and I want to show you a couple more having to do with data informing your design and how it can help your design. So when you're doing a competitive analysis, compete.com is a really useful site. This example here, I've put in three knitting sites, and it will show you the search terms that are driving people to those sites, how many visits they're getting. You can look at the sites that are linking to them. And usually on the first page, you see a lot of branded search. Like you'll see, I don't know how much of that you can see, but one of them's Ravelry.com, and a lot of the searches are Ravelry.com. But you can click and get more and see all of the search terms and look for the ones that are relevant to the features you're trying to provide or the people that you're trying to reach. So when you're creating your competitive analysis, you can include those search terms to help people think about what your competition is doing. Looking at search terms is also really useful in creating personas. So in this case, I did a search on Google's keyword finder tool. I can never remember the name of that. So here I looked at asthma kids, asthma help, and asthma allergies. And you get results of related searches that people are doing. And this is another case where you can dig down and you can get, you know, like as many as you want. But looking at the top 100, you can start to cluster them and look at how they match the tasks that you already know that your personas have. And here you're getting closer to people's natural language when you see these terms than maybe what you're just coming up with on your own. And the last one has to do with content strategy. So taking your content audit and looking at how much content you have in different sections of your site and then comparing that to where people are going on your site. Is there a match between the content people are looking for and the content you're offering? This slide's been really helpful for me in demonstrating our need for resource time to write content. Everybody's coming to look about academics, and we have very little there in student life. I can tell you that the amount of content we have in about there is a reflection of our siloed approach where anytime somebody wants to put something new on the web, it's like, well, let's put it in about, because if we put it somewhere else, it's like they own it and we couldn't possibly have that happen. But this slide has been really, really useful for me in showing people how we need to match our content. We need more content in our subject areas.
So we talk a lot in UX about storytelling, and this is sort of, I guess, the way that I think of data too, and I think Nate Silver touched on this. It's storytelling, but using data. And again, the whole idea of web analytics and making it a priority if it's not for you already is just, it helps you advocate for your user. It again, it gives you that seat at the table, that credibility that you need, because you can speak in a context that your business counterparts can understand. And we hope this talk will kind of push you more in that direction if it's something that you feel is not, you know, your bag right now, but maybe this will kind of hopefully lead you in that direction further. And if you have questions for us, by all means.
These are the links to the resources that we mentioned.
Right.
I found this very good. I love web analytics. I live web analytics. Yay. I breathe web analytics. And I work for a government.
Right.
So persistent cookies are out the door.
Yeah.
I'm on session cookies or IP user agent. We are just going through a user ability study and looking at other websites like governments that do have the ability to use persistent cookies. How can we show if we're on target with what, you know, they've done and they have their metrics? We have different sets of measuring because of the sessional persistent. So help?
Well, it's a question. It can be answered through, I mean, it could be a tool situation where maybe you're not using the right tool. You might have some issues with trying to do sort of longer term sort of correlations of stuff that's happening. That actually, I was going to say, that's kind of an involved question that I could totally jump off and talk to you about afterwards, because there is some different things you can do to kind of address that. But I'll walk you through it in more detail that won't make these people want to die and or miss Lou. Yeah.
Hi. Great presentation, by the way. Thank you. But one of the things that I struggle with when trying to measure web analytics for design is actually being able to segment it enough to be able to say that because of this design change, it affected the overall user experience. And what I mean is there are other factors involved when you're measuring certain KPIs, like, you know, advertising that marketing is doing, offline things. It could be seasonal.
Yep.
And so how do you get granular enough to say that, you know, because I changed, you know, this button blue, it increased conversions by 12%.
Well, there's different things you can do. I mean, you can look at using, and we didn't really talk about this because it really is like a presentation in and of itself, but the idea of like optimization testing, A/B testing, bucket testing, you can get into doing some of that, and actually it gives you that granular view of like, you know, this button, it did show like a 3% higher increase in sales, and overall we saw like a bump of about that much. So, and that's the other thing to really remember in this field is that you're never going to get like 100% numbers that you can take to the accountant and say, bang, that's not going to happen. You know, we have issues with cookies, you have issues with tracking, so it's always going to be like, even understanding 50% and having that kind of, you can see trends and look for things like that, that really helps. But granular testing and really getting into, and if you look at Josh Porter, his company, Performable, they have some great tools for that. And so does Omniture and Google, even Website Optimizer can be really good at helping you figure out those little bits and lining them up to bigger trends that you're seeing. Does that help? Cool.
Hi, thanks a lot. It was great. I had a question about the keyword searches, Julie, that you talked about, and tying those to personas. And there was a little bit of a miracle occurring. Can you talk specifically about how you would do that?
Sure. Sometimes it would be a miracle occurring. But in looking at the wording that's being used, often you can guess at the task from the words in the search. So that's where the match is happening, when it's clear that the search is related to a particular task. So I think with the example with asthma, some of the search terms were related to stopping an asthma attack. So if one of the tasks that you're seeing in your persona is like an intervention kind of task, somebody trying to help their kid who's struggling at the moment or something like that, that's where you're making the connection. If it's long-term prevention, then it might be a healthcare provider for the state who's doing phone interviews with parents. So it's trying to match the terms to a task that you already know.
And taking it even further into IA, you can even use some of that stuff in your nav to kind of, if you see somebody's always searching for asthma tools, you want to use that.
Well, we're out of time, unfortunately, but give it up for our speakers.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from the 2011 IA Summit. For more great user experience design content, visit UIE.com and sign up for our free newsletter, UIE Tips.